we get to showcase four of them, two in the first hour and two in the second hour. And it would be great to showcase more, but as you say, it's in the archives, and then it will become a podcast and then be more readily available.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the podcast because you get to the feeling of these guests that you have, and you'll get like all of their information and all of the, I don't know, they're great. So who are the people that we're going to listen to today?
We're going to be listening to John Clark. He is the great-grandnephew of Duke Kahanamoku and a graduate of the University of Hawaii. But what makes him really interesting is he works for the Department of Health, and he did his master's degree at the University of Hawaii, and he was studying the drowning rates of Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders. And his master's thesis was resident drowning accidents in Hawaii descriptive analysis. Based on his research, he is in the water safety plan because he identified that Hawaiians are 1.5 times more likely to drown than any other population in Hawaii. And that made the news. Caitlin Thompson covered it, and it's all over the place in terms of targeting. And he would say it's a public health issue, equality, and he's very interested in disparities among different indigenous people. So let's take a listen to what John had to say to us.
Yeah, I totally want to do that. Also, stay tuned because we have Kaina Makua coming on too.
Yes. For those of you who don't know who he is, he runs an amazing organization on the west side called Kumana Ke Iala and Aloha Aina Poi. And he works with youth and he does an amazing job. On top of that, he has played King Kamea in the very successful show Chief of War. So he has a lot to say about messaging and philosophy also.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, Kauai's hometown hero now, you know, because he was in Chief of War.
Yes.
But he does like an amazing program out there. I got to work with him a little bit when I worked with Malama Kauai because of his agricultural, like using...
It's terra farming.
Yeah, agriculture and cultural practices to create identity among youth.
Yes.
and give them that empowerment to be like Hawaiian men and women. And I was like, I love it.
I've shared that video that Sam Potter did, having been mentored by Kaina, called Aloha Aina, which we have on our
show page too.
It's a very good video about what he does. So that should be really interesting, and about the messaging and the culture and how it should be mandatory.
Yeah, and then that's the first hour. Second hour, we're going science on you.
Yes.
And we have Dr. Sempstraat.
Yes. He has been a lifeguard, EMT, medic, and now an ER doc, and his focus is on training lifeguards and parents, and he talks all about CPR. And I suggest that anybody who is a parent should be listening to this podcast. I mean, actually interview with him, and maybe the full interview, because it's that good. Then we have Angel Yanagihara, who is an amazing researcher with the University of Hawaii, who developed a protocol for box jellyfish stings. And her whole story is very, very interesting. Copper gluconate is what she discovered, and she worked with Diana Nyad to make her fifth swim from Cuba to Florida successful because of her protocol.
Right, and so it's like a jellyfish relief, right?
Right, it just takes all the, it's a treatment. It prevents it from getting worse.
Yeah, and there has been a jellyfish warning, right?
Yes, there was yesterday for Waikiki.
Okay.
That they're supposed to talk to the lifeguards before they go in the beach, in the water.
And so I thought that was a really timely, like, oh my gosh, we just talked to Dr. Yanagihara, and she's you know, everything kind of works out really nicely that way. And then it's also cardiac arrest month.
Yes, it is.
Right.
Right.
So Dr. Sempstraat and his ER doc bent is also really
and his lifeguard
as well.
Experience and medic experience and EMT experience he makes him a big expert, and he works internationally and does research.
Right. And I think that's amazing. And so this show deep dive into water safety is addressing and starting the conversation and continuing the conversation on the fact that Hawaii has the second highest drowning rate in the nation, and drowning is preventable.
Yes.
And just because you're experienced in the water, or you've been in the water before, or you think some accident won't happen, there is always that possibility. And so we want to, community radio gets to say those hard topics so that we all think about it and keep our communities safe.
Right. And that's what our guests are going to tell you today.
Yeah. So let's start with Kalei Clark.
Yes.
And go. Ready and now.
Let's start by telling me how you were drawn to studying this, right? Particularly focusing on resident populations.
The kind of outcome of, the study really just feels like it's been part of a larger and ongoing journey for myself. You know, I grew up in a very small coastal town in Aotearoa, New Zealand, named Whakatane. As a teen, I worked as an ocean lifeguard, as a beach education instructor for our community. So we were teaching elementary, middle school students kind of about the beach safety and the ocean environment. I also competed, swimming and a sport called surf lifesaving at the time. Moved to Hawaii in 2018. Started my public health journey, undergraduate degree, and then swam at the collegiate level. And then during this time, I was also, working part-time as a swim instructor, just making side money. So, I've been involved in ocean and water-related public health for, several years now. 2021 rolls around, and one of my former swimming and surf lifesaving coaches actually connected me to a gentleman named Mark Haimona. And Mark studies and works with the Māori communities on drowning prevention efforts. The Māori are the indigenous people of Aotearoa, New Zealand. And this group has long faced significant disparities in drowning rates. So, Mark's work over a simple coffee and him explaining it to me inspired me to question, what drowning prevention efforts might look like for the Pacific communities here. 2022, I began my master's degree in epidemiology at the University of Hawaii. And as I learned it, epidemiology forms the backbone of public health. So in order to make informed public health decisions, we have to start with data. Whether that comes from mo'olelo, that's stories, statistics, the numbers, testimonies, and other sources. And so it's during this program that I conducted my capstone research under Dr. Daniel Galanis. He is an epidemiologist at the Emergency Medical Services and Injury Prevention Systems Branch at the Hawaii Department of Health. And so that's where I began my kind of student researcher role. That's where I started this work that's in the report. While I was studying under Dan, I read several studies documenting drowning disparities in Indigenous communities, not only in Aotearoa, but also Australia, Canada, and Alaska. And, at the time, I'm reading through all these papers, and I couldn't find anything that examined drowning among Kanaka Māori, particularly the community here, the Kanaka Māori community here and our Pacifica cousins. And so really, my work as a student researcher was just done to fill the puka, to fill the gap in the research. So that's a little bit about the story of how we got here.
There we go. So that was Kalei Clark's first excerpt from his entire interview, talking about how he got to researching drownings.
Yeah, we'll see a lot from him in the future in terms of his research and his involvement in drowning prevention.
Right. So Department of Health stuff. And I know one of the things that you personally advocate for is that drowning prevention should be taught in schools, and it should be taught, it's a public health crisis, so it should be the focus of the Department of Health in Hawaii.
Right, and Department of Education.
Yeah, so. And as we go on in this first hour, there's going to be some suggestions from our interviewees about how to integrate cultural teachings with water safety.
Right.
Yeah.
John Calais talks about cultural competency, which mm-hmm. is very interesting. And in his interview, he talks about the wave of Hilo, which is very interesting. It's a chant that he brings up, whether we have that cut from that. His whole entire interview is very good.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with him. So here's our second take from John Calais Clark. Here we go.
What do you think are the underlying factors that drives this disparity?
Great question. My research didn't quite investigate this yet, but I can give my opinion on it.
Okay.
It's my opinion that the time spent in the water with extended family was historically essential for passing on water safety knowledge and just the skill set, right? And I'm looking at my kupuna, you know, my Auntie Aulani and that generation of cousins, the Kahana Moku brothers and sisters, all raised in Kalia. There was no swim lessons, right? They just spent time together. They spent time in the water, in the environment, and they really got to know it. Today, I believe that there are economic pressures that often keep families from spending time together in the ocean or near water. You know, folks have to work more hours, folks have to work more jobs just to be able to live here, you know. And this leaves probably less time to pass down that cultural knowledge. You know, despite these challenges, I think the connection to the ocean still exists for Pacifica, for Kanaka here. And so, you know, I believe that this group in particular is still drawn to this, to these bodies of water, you know, whether it's fresh, whether it's salt. You know, we come from these spaces. And so, you know, I would speculate that the Kanaka and the Pacifica people here, we just continue to engage in these spaces more frequently, possibly than other groups in Hawaii. Again, it's just a reflection of the deep cultural and historical connection that we have. So that would be my kind of speculation.
Well, it says in the water safety plan that we'd lost our way and been disconnected from the culture of watermen and waterwomen, a legacy, as you say, everyone in the family was in the water all the time. And you're talking about the economic issues, trying to live here. There's just one other question in here before we talk about what is the headline takeaway you want every local family to hear. But what role do you think the cultural practices like OPE picking and shoreline fishing played in resident drowning incidents?
There were a considerable number of resident drownings, you know, of all ethnicities, where folks were free diving and or picky picking. These are really important cultural activities, and in no way should people be deterred from practicing. I think risks surrounding these activities can be reduced through education, through taking precautions and knowing one's limits. In that, I also believe we have a real opportunity to strengthen our safety education through cultural competency. So making a safety education relevant to the community you're working with, to the environment that these people enter in. So I think there's a real opportunity there.
How do you see us doing that? I mean, I see Dwayne DeSoto making real progress. And he's now going to have water safety as a pilot program in the schools, which I think is great. We have Nikki Roderick, who's coming with Free Dive Safe in the schools, which is teaching how to be safe free diving. But do you have any other ideas about how you'd like to see this be implemented?
So, yeah, I mean, there's, opinions. I think the world of Nikki. I think the world of what the Dwayne guys are doing. I think it's just awesome. I think they're doing it right. You know, they have a massive following and people are really interested in getting their pinky involved. That is an amazing place to be. I'm very interested in reading how cultural competency and water safety is conducted in Aotearoa. There exists swim lessons in their Korero Māori, in their language. And, you know, one thing I've noticed is there's real power in making a space yours. So any type of education surrounding the water, you know, if you can integrate kind of the thought processes, the language, the protocols to the group that you're targeting, then that's when messages really start to come home. I think, you know, we've had a few cultural renaissances here in Hawaii, and people are really interested in getting their children involved and just more involved in the culture and the language. If there was a swim lesson offered in Olelo Hawaii, perhaps the fact that it is Olelo Hawaii, that it is a, you know, Hawaiian run, that it is involving protocols, involving Oli, that might be a way to bring people in. People are just very interested in getting, learning more about the culture. And I think if you just make more pathways available, then, you know, that's an attraction point for folks.
I think that's a really excellent idea. So you want to learn more about what's going on in New Zealand in terms of that? Is that what you were saying? You wanted to read more about their research on that piece?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, historically, the Pacific has always leaned on each other for different knowledges.
You know,
navigation, we came back, we brought it back from Micronesia. Punana Leo, modeled after language nests in Aotearoa. So I really love the idea of sharing. I'd also love to just read a bit more into kind of the indigenous pedagogy of how folks learn, like just the process of it. You know, are folks more hands-on? You know, different groups learn differently.
This goes along with what we're trying to do on the show. I've had people from the UK. I've had people from Australia. Mm-hmm. About to have somebody from Dubai, which would be a different part of the culture. But the people in Australia, the people in the UK are telling me they want to collaborate and they want to learn more and share ideas. And I think you're absolutely right. And I haven't connected with anybody from New Zealand. So if you, after we've talked, you give me that contact, I'd like to speak to somebody. I know it's ingrained in the schools there, right? Mm-hmm. Water safety. I mean, it just is part of it. And in my opinion, I think it should be here. And I think what you're saying about the culture is absolutely right on, because mm-hmm. everybody can learn from that. People who visit can learn from that. I think that's really a great idea, Kalei.
Oh, mahalo. Yeah. I think there's one more thing I'd wanted to touch on, you know, in terms of kind of protocols. You know, looking back at some of the older Oli that our kupuna did, they really involved the skill of kilos, just to look, to observe, to slow down and acknowledge. I think about this one chant and I look at it as a guide for kind of water safety.
Okay.
And it's this one that talks about the wave of hilo. It describes how the wave breaks. So whether it's surging, whether it's spilling, it talks about the wind spraying the water off the back, how it crashes it into the rocks, how it pounds the earth, and then talks about an individual who had the malo, traditional loincloth, and urges that person to kind of gird it, to pull it tight. You know, maybe a UFC fighter might wrap up their gloves or businessman might fasten their tie as to get ready. It's kind of, you're pulling the loincloth tight to acknowledge, okay, this is a big challenge. If it's loose, it's going to come off. I feel very lucky because our kupuna left us a lot of amazing messages that, again, we just have an amazing opportunity to bite down deeper into that kind of stuff.
I think that's
particularly here.
That could make a great model, and you should be involved in that.
And that was our excerpt from John Kalei Clark. And I couldn't find a recording or the words to the Wave of Hilo.
I have the Wave of Hilo. Really? He gave it to me, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. Is it readable?
Yes.
Let's do it.
I don't have it with me. I'm sorry. I can look it up. If you just give me a second.
Yeah, awesome.
Of course you do this to me, Anne.
I know. This is community radio right here, right? So let's play a song from Tavana here. And our next, stay tuned, in the next hour, we have Kaina Makua coming in as our, not coming in, but as our next excerpt interview here on Deep Dive into Water Safety on Kauai Community Radio. Okay, so I lied about having the words to the chant. I put Margaret on the spot, and
I
then...
I mean, I have it, but... One is in Hawaiian and the other one is in English, but I don't know if we want to take the time to do it. It's up to you. It's your show.
How about I post it on our show page?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll do that. You can find that at kkcr.org/on-air/archives.
Wave of Hilo.
/deep dive. And then, so the chant is the Wave of Hilo.
Yes.
And as it applies to, I know, like, it was a
water
model
safety.
For Kalei and thinking about water safety and getting ready to be in the water.
Yes. You know, he said a couple of things that were interesting, which is that Hawaiians look, slow down, and observe.
Yeah.
And we need to be mindful like that. So he had two chants he gave me, mm-hmm. the Wave of Hilo and the Huge Roller.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's have them both at the website. I love doing that. So, hey, you're listening to Kauai Community Radio. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, KCQA Anaholo, and K205 FM Honolulu. You can find us at kkcr.org. You can find us at the app that is on your phone. And if it's not, you can find it wherever you get apps. 90.9 FM Hanalei, 91.9 FM Kilauea side and east side. And in Anaholo Maloa'a, you can find us at 90.7. You can also find us in pockets on the west side as well. So thanks for tuning in, and thanks for being with us here on KKCR. Let's play this PSA. Indeed. Let's let them work together to keep them safe, and then let's work together to keep us safe as well. What's our next interview?
It's Kaina Makua, and for those of you who know who he is, because he played King Kamehameha and Chief of War, which is now, you know, being televised, streamed, a great show. He is also known for his work on the West Side. We have a YouTube video called Aloha Aina that actually showcases what he does. But he has co-founded Kumano I Ke Ala, a nonprofit focused on uplifting Native Hawaiian youth through Aina-based education. And his work includes restoration, taro farming, and food system revitalization. And he operates Aloha Aina Poi Company and distributes across Hawaii and nationally. Actually, you can have it FedExed. He talks a lot about what he does and his philosophy, which I find to be really important to understand this person and a lot of Hawaiian culture, that goes on to support what John Clark was talking about. You'll find that really interesting. And then he talks about water safety and the messaging that should go into that.
And he also coaches the youth.
Yes, he coaches Kilo Hana paddling youth. And he talks about that in terms of his whole cultural values. And just before they were going over to do the Molokai Channel, these girls who are 15, we talked about it. That Sunday, they came in first in the Molokai Channel, his 15-year-old girls from Kauai.
Fantastic.
From Kealohana.
Yeah,
yeah,
congratulations, ladies.
Yep.
And so, yeah, here's excerpts from his interview. You can find the entire interview at kkcr.org and a forthcoming podcast. Let's listen to our first bit from Kaina Makua.
Well, mahalo for the time, Margaret. It's great to meet you yourself. And, water safety, crazy, huh?
But tell me about your organization.
I can start with our organization. I am, you know, currently the executive director and co-founder of Kumano I Ke Ala, also founded by myself and Davis Price, which is a good friend of mine. We formed Kumano Ikiala back in 2015. And it really was a means of survival to an extent. I love teaching. I was a teacher for about 8 years prior to starting Kumano Ikiala. And I had felt that I could create maybe a system that wasn't so much of, you know, bureaucracy and BS involved, and continue to teach and educate, but have a bigger reach and not so much of some crazy boundaries as we are bounded by some four-wall buildings as teachers. And so 2015, we created Kumano Ikiala, simultaneously creating Aloha Aina Poi Company, which now falls and sits under the umbrella of Kumano Ikiala and works as a social enterprise for our nonprofit organization. It's basically now the vehicle that takes everything that we farm on about, at the moment, we might have about 100 so acres of land that we're still building out. But Aloha Aina Poi Company has become the vehicle to take all of what we farm on these parcels of land and share it with the world, share it with our community, create some form of economics that will continue to feed into this semi-ecosystem that we've created to keep people here, ideally, to keep our community here, to keep our locals here. We look at living, housing. Everything is skyrocketed after COVID-19. And so our whole goal, our whole concept and philosophy is how do we continue to thrive and keep our people here? I mean, livable wages is one thing. Housing is another. Food sovereignty, indigenous foods, and just being not even Hawaiian, but human. How do we build great humans? How do we ensure that as we grow as an organization, as we continue to do the good work, how do we keep the good humans good? Where do we build that from? How do we keep them safe? How do we give them all the options in the world so that they can choose what they believe is for them? And, you know, it's every day it's a struggle. Every day it's a game changer. It's something we look forward to. And I think for myself, it's so fun because you're building a world that really nobody's seen, but a world that will most likely help to save the world that we live in reality. You know, and so I would just definitely pai and encourage those who don't know much about us to check out our website, check out our social handles, Kumano Ikiala, Instagram, Facebook, kumanoikiala.org, and you can find everything you need to know about our organization and the things that we do. And if that's still not enough, we are located at 4877 Menehune Road. Come and check out our farm. Come and check out our facilities. Everybody is more than welcome. The only thing I would stress is if you do come, be mindful because you may not want to go home. So that's us in a nutshell. And, you know, mahalo for having me here.
That was our first excerpt from the interview with Kaina Makua.
It's really important that everybody gets to understand his philosophy, who this person is, and how he relates and mentors the youth on the West Side. We can all learn from that. How can we create better humans? And how can we make a world that's better? I thought it was great messaging, and his values and his thinking about things, I think, will make a difference when you listen to the rest of this excerpt.
Let's get on to our second excerpt from Kaina Makua.
What is our solution now? I mean, what kind of messaging can we do? I mean, we have this high drowning rate. Dwayne DeSoto asks, why? Why do we have this high drowning rate?
There's nobody to blame, but my observation is nobody really investing in kai, in ocean and water in Hawaii. Yeah, we have a nice percentage of it, But there's a huge percentage of kids that don't even compete or do any type of sports related to swimming or the ocean or water. You know, a lot of our youth are invested in football, baseball, softball, volleyball that doesn't deal with any type of ocean or water exercises or activities. And yeah, I think it should be mandated throughout Hawaii that from kindergarten, you need to be in the water.
Singapore, you know? You can't graduate unless you get through.
We live on an island, all of us. We all live on islands.
Yes.
We're surrounded by the biggest island, which is the ocean. Right. We all should know how to swim or at least float.
We should start with the basics, right?
At the very least. I've been in Honolulu. I've lived in the city, and you see a lot of kids that they're very protective by their parents, which, you know, we get it. But how do we, like you said, how do we create how do we give the kids strength and bravery when there's times of fear, control, and all those little nuances of being in the ocean that makes us a lot afraid, not a little, a lot.
The guy in the UK who's part of the surf life-saving group, David Samuel, and he has something called Sandhoppers. It's a program they just started, 5 to 7-year-old kids, but it's not just the kids, it's their parents also. Because a lot of times the parents don't have the knowledge about the ocean, right? And so if you can get them comfortable, it seems to be a very cool program. And it's not, this is what we're going to do to teach swimming. It's getting you comfortable in the ocean, floating, going underwater, all those kinds of things. And it seems to be very successful.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, it, in a controlled environment is definitely where you should start. So somewhere like, you know, Kauai, we have salt pond. We have a lot of rivers, and that's really good places to start with.
So you think it should be mandated. So that's our issue, isn't
it? All the way. We live on an island.
Why are we having such a problem getting it back into the school system?
It's crazy. You know, it's mind-boggling on so many levels and for so many things. And swimming is really just the tip of the spear, I feel like, that is causing a lot of these either near deaths or death situations. And you know, just uneducated.
And that was Kaina Makua, his second portion, and now here's the third that I really enjoy because he talks about ceremony and kind of giving Native kids that sense of place, which I really enjoy.
Okay, so I don't know what you cut or what you didn't, but and Chief of War in episode 6, it's called the
law of the splinter paddle.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so is that in this excerpt?
Yeah, this is in the next excerpt.
So that's if people watch Chief of War, which I recommend, he talks about this and how it can relate to water safety.
Yeah. It's real good. So here we go.
I want to know, and that's a law that's in the state constitution. I don't know a whole lot about it. That's why I was asking her. Can that apply to water safety if we're talking about?
You know, I'm not sure on the policies for law, but I would think we could definitely that could be definitely adopted in the same respects for water safety, and you know, I think we just have to work on some of the verbiage.
Can you explain a little bit more to our listeners what we're talking about?
Mamalahoa, the law of the splintered paddle was a law that Kamehameha created after being hit on the back of the head with a paddle by some farmers, as they believed that he was an outsider and threatening to either steal, kill, or do some type of harm to whatever community he visited. And so he created a law called the Law of the Splintered Paddle because it, you know, the paddle broke on the back of his head or his back. And the law was no one is allowed to harm elders, people without homes, people on the side of the road, kids, and that everyone, you know, should really live in community and fellowship. So that's the gist of Mama Lahore. Yeah, so looking at that and comparing that to safety in the ocean would be just some things that we'd have to, you know, fine-tune as far as verbiage. Was pretty epic because, you know, regardless of your stature, according to Kamehameha, regardless of your stature, you could be on chief. It's not your right to go and harm people, steal from people. And so he created this law that was, it was groundbreaking at the time. And even till today, you can understand it thoroughly. You can feel them. You can actually buy into that ideology, that philosophy, that Kamehameha, you know, because he was right. Not Kamehameha, but the farmer that hit him was on the right, you know.
Yeah.
Just defending his home. And unfortunately, the highest chief at the time was the guy that took the hit. And for him to come out and say he was in the wrong, that's pretty awesome of a man to do that.
That's why the culture, the Hawaiian culture, which was far ahead in women's rights and anti-slavery, well, yeah. Your culture is very special and should be part of the messaging in water safety, in my opinion. We've kind of lost that connection, is what Dwayne said, to the ocean. We've lost that connection and we're not investing in our young people like we should. And as you said, we're surrounded by water.
I think, you know, I would say, you know, like, man, how do we mandate that? How do we create more spaces where people can feel comfortable in water and mindful and intelligent enough and educated enough to make the right decisions? I mean, if you're looking at the ocean and it's howling rip currents, 20 knots, I don't know, making up some stuff, but
right. There's
some white caps, it'd probably be a great idea that you not get in. You know, challenging your abilities to something that we have no control or understanding thoroughly about should caution you to not go out. You know, so educating and also making the right decisions upon what you have observed. And, you know, classes with observations is very big too.
Yeah.
Sitting on the, I make, you know, all of our youth that paddle and all of our youth that is involved with our program, or any of our programming, they sit on the beach, you know, at least half an hour at a time just to observe the current, just to observe really all the currents, the wind. And that's big also, you know, that's like the very first fundamental of being one with ocean and kai and in the water. It's very important. I used to hear stories of Iria Aikau doing the same. And so I kind of implemented that when I first took over the canoe club by the original founders. That was one of the things I stressed. You're sitting over here until you can tell me what's happening out there. And even when you know what's happening, you can visually see what's happening. That's not enough for me, you know, to confirm that you understand, to confirm that you can be safe. Now you got to go in there and you can tread some water. And then you got to learn. And I'm going to be right on the side waiting to catch you if you need help, you know, and that's some of the things people don't invest in. It's, yeah. And, you know, I think Dwayne said it, hit it right on the nail. People, we're not invested in that. And I think, yeah, I know we should. We should have more of that everywhere. Every canoe club should have one. Every surfing team should have that. Every water polo team should be able to go in the ocean and understand it. Anybody that deal with water should definitely have the first crack. The kids, at least, they should have the first crack at understanding the ocean to that extent. And wherever it leads from there, somehow mandate it as much as possible. It's a great cross-training tool also. So if you're a football player, go do some laps in the pool, go help your joints. You know, it's injury prevention. It's going to help with a lot of things. We just don't look at it as a, we got away from looking at all of our sports being circular, where if you're playing football and you're swimming, they're actually helping each other. You know, if you're doing a sport that is hard on your joints, swimming alleviates that and prevents injuries. I mean, but we don't think in that mindset. And I believe our people from Hawaii understood all of those little nuances of, you know, the physicality of humans.
So we have to get that back, that messaging back.
I believe so.
The work that you do appears to me, is it written down, this, or do you just have this in your head as being a waterman?
What we're talking about now, I definitely have it written down. It's not entirely built out like a curriculum, but it's things that I'll teach every season that arrives for paddling. And any of our programming, like we run fall programming, spring programming, winter and summer at our farms, and the kids will do the same. Even though they're at a farm on land, they're still going in the water to swim every once in a while, so they got to know all these things. It's a lot of work, but somebody got to do.
Yeah, but you need more of you, as you said.
I agree.
So maybe you have to take this to another level, because it's kind of frustrating to see what we've got going here.
And yeah, 37% is high.
Yeah, it's way too high.
It's crazy.
And it shouldn't be like that. So would you suggest doing any different kind of messaging for visitors now? Have you thought about that at all? That might
be, you know, we'll definitely make some strides in that realm of messaging and water safety. We would love to even, you know, grab some segments from what has already been created in a lot of the voiceovers that I see Kalani has done. Uh-huh. and run that through our, you know, social media platforms. But also, you know, make it, you know, I see TikTok. I don't see it, but I see my kids on TikTok. That's some of the right things that they could use on TikTok everywhere. You know, you got to buy into this new version of youth education and youth, they call that when they're very
focused
on whatever they're focused on. Yep. And at the moment, TikTok is the thing.
Yep.
And so I think we got to start making some strides and some TikTok videos where people can learn and simplify it to a degree, but give them the time to also see the craziness of what the ocean can be.
Right. Based on your culture, which I think is really important. Okay. So you're willing to do that?
Yeah, we'll probably start to do that. We have a full-time social media specialist that does a lot of our social media. So we'll definitely have some conversations around that and see where that brings us.
Well, that's really good news. And for young children, how about something for the governor?
Yeah, like as if he's the one learning. You know, it would be the same grounds. I don't really separate the age of a person, or even the education and intelligence or physicality of a person that knows or may know or is, you know, strong enough for the ocean. But it's always, regardless of your abilities and your education, you should always be a humble person to the ocean, because as great as you are, I mean, we've seen it in many of our stories. Iriaikau was one of them, and many more, that it don't really matter how good, how strong, how smart you are, because the wrong decision can always happen. The gut feeling decision might be the right one, might be the wrong one. But how do we create a space with the highest percentage of chance of the best one, the best decision? And that's really the thought behind this for me.
That would make a good message.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, you're right.
You could talk about stats all day long, but the stories really people relate to. You tell a story and people might think about how that could affect them when they are in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, I agree.
Kalei Clark asked me to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Who he is?
I don't know.
He was born in Aotearoa. He grew up in Aotearoa, New Zealand, is the great-grandnephew of Duke Kahanamoku.
No way.
Yeah.
Wait, what's his name?
John Kalei Clark. He has a very long middle name, but he goes by Kalei. and he came back here to study. And how he learned about that was somebody there over a cup of coffee was telling him about his work working with the Maori population. So he came here and did his master's thesis on understanding indigenous population here and came up with this data that helped him understand what was going on, even though you may have known. So that was kind of interesting. And he just finished the Epic Maui Challenge because he's a...
Okay. Yeah.
He did that. He said he would never do it again. But anyway.
Decathlon or something, huh? Not decathlon. What is it?
They had to swim around the whole island.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, with the ocean conditions and the health of the ocean. So they were taking samples of the ocean.
Wow.
Along the way, and it was swimmers from all over the world. So anyway.
Unreal.
Yeah. So after my interview, I told him you were going to come on, and he said, "Could I ask a question?" I said, "Well, of course." Here's the question from Kalei.
Okay.
What is next for Kalehui? Did I pronounce that right?
For Kalehui, what is next for our people? What is next for Hawaiian people?
Talk about water safety.
What is next for all of our Lahui? I'm going to leave with this, I think. My good friend of mine, Nick Tilson, he runs NDN Collective. It's a Native American organization. And he said this in one of his conference presentations as he was one of the keynote speakers. And he said, we got to create more new ceremonies, create new ceremonies. And whatever that looks like, you know, it really was, to me, I was like, wow, yeah, it's cool. Because we have ceremonies that we do now that have been created hundreds of years ago for that time, for that era. But nothing that we've created now. And thinking about that and thinking about our conversation now, yeah, so ceremony this. We trying to create a positive impact on our swimming community, on the ocean, and make it global. How do we do that? How do we ensure that everyone buys into the ceremony, whatever that ceremony looks like and is, whether it's spreading awareness, whether it's actually doing the do and teaching the youth, it's still in a way a ceremony. And how do we ensure that everybody is level-headed, understands their role, understands their kuleana, so that, you know, we can all be well-educated, make the right choice at the right time, at the very high percentage, and, you know, decrease those numbers, maybe even get it to nothing one day. I don't know, but it's a ceremony nonetheless, and that would be my pitch, and that would be my answer to John's question, Kalei's question, create more ceremonies of our time.
And that was the completion of our excerpts from Kainamakua talking about water safety and how he integrates that with Native Hawaiian youth.
And he gave some really good information about messaging here, how we should be a humble person in the ocean, and we should create our own ceremony to position safety globally and getting everyone to buy into it, to be level-headed and understand our role, our kuleana, to make the right choice at the right time.